I mean, as you can see, with the demise of my Premier League team, I've sort of gone deeper into NFL. I'm like real deep right now.
Is that just solely because your team is shit, or because you're genuinely love is great? Yeah. Or is it because your love for NFL is actually growing?
Well, first of all, steady on, right? Right. Pot calling kettle black and all that. Pot calling kettle black.
Are you in the league now?
Who? United. But one win changes or loss changes everything.
Yeah, one.
Do you know what?
Some relegation zone.
Exactly. Yeah. You know they do goal of the month, right?
This is a lie, by the way.
It's not.
It is.
It's not. It so isn't. But anyway, yeah. Do you know what the suggestion was? Yeah, Rashford's penalty was goal of the month.
Is that a league thing or a Man United thing?
Man United thing.
Man United's goal of the month.
It was McTominay's. It's McTominay's versus yours.
Oh, it wouldn't have been a pen. Don't do that to us.
It's so rude.
I mean, it's a vicious rumour if it is a rumour. I'm not going to lie, I believed it, and that speaks volumes.
The thing is, as soon as I saw the Newcastle lineup, I knew we were going to lose. Because they were basically playing five at the back, right? And for me, can't break anyone down. Like, no one. Like, Rochdale played five at the back. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can't. It just can't happen. Until confidence comes back. It's forget about it.
And even then,
No, confidence is a big thing.
Do you have the players with confidence to break down good teams?
Yes, I say it with confidence.
Who? McTominay.
No, I think
is he making that slide?
I think people like Martial and Pogba back could break down a team. And with United, the biggest problem is the second goal. We are going 1-0 up, and then nothing. A 2-0, and that's all confidence. And a lot of it, what I'm saying, is just blind faith, because I need something to cling on to.
Anyway, I can get a couple more.
Yeah, of
course. But yeah, we'll see. What I will stake everything on is that we will not be relegated. That I can give you a personal guarantee.
Either, but the fact that it's a
conversation.
It's a conversation. Is really bad.
Well, it's not really a surprise to me. You know how I feel about Ole. You know how I felt about Ole from the get-go.
Ole is a shit manager, and then he may get you relegated. Those are two different things.
No, he won't get us relegated. I don't think he'll see New Year, to be fair.
I hope he does.
Yeah, of course. When other teams hope your manager stays, you know that manager has to go. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was rooting for Wenger to stay for about 20 years.
Wenger's my idol.
Yeah.
Side note, is anyone watching... Rhythm and Flow.
No,
I haven't started.
With T.I.
It's sick.
Is it good?
Is it fiction really or is funny. It? Is it fiction or is it?
That's what we normally doesn't really appeal to me, but it's really because
I'm not gonna lie. I watched the trailer for it and I thought, congratulations, hip hop, you've officially gone full mainstream.
Yeah, because when I was on holiday, for some reason my hotel had BBC. And one night, everyone was in bed, and I was watching the
UK
rap game.
One, yeah.
Yeah, with Captain Conan. Yeah.
That's good as well, I think.
No, I hate it.
That's the one I'm thinking of, yeah. I don't know about the one you're talking about, but I think that's
surprisingly good, I thought.
I thought it was quite good as well, mainly because it's... Actually, the people on it have talent, right? Some of them have talent. And I think it's good because they're not basing it on Crept and Conan, who aren't like the most charismatic. They're bringing other artists like they went to Birmingham and brought Mist in. Like they're trying to give exposure to the scene. And the bit that I only saw one episode, and I came back and watched some others. But it was when they were clashing.
Yes.
There was one bit where basically they clearly interviewed the people before and said, what do you think the person's going to go for?
Yeah.
And then one girl was like, well, my family's really close and my aunt died of cancer recently, but I don't think he'll go for that. Like, that would be pretty low. And the first thing he said is like, your aunt's dead. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow. It was just like, I don't like the way you're talking to me, but I don't think you can talk to your aunt. Because you know what I mean? Like, it was just
It was
carnage.
You know how I knew it was brutal was the camera then cut to who's the DJ
from Target. Yeah,
even he was like, nah.
Yeah. Because I think they had Getz on it, and I think the first one was them sparring, but you could tell they liked each other.
Yeah.
And then Getz was like, yeah, it's not real clashing, blah blah blah. And then these two came on, and the thing is, the other thing is, she did a freestyle, and they all thought it wasn't a freestyle, like she rehearsed it. Yeah. So he started calling her a cheat, and then she started losing her cool. Like, when did I cheat? Yeah. Da, 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 da. And I was like, this is carnage. I'm going to go home and watch this.
When she accused him of saying that
he banged Kona's girl. And he's like, I'll shut my life and it's saying, like, the thing is, after the clash, usually you spud and go your separate ways. And then he was like,
he was
trying to get like second opinions. Did I say that? Like, you know, we were sitting in the room. Did I say that? I shut my life for this. And I was just like, this is carnage. This is carnage.
That's so funny.
Wait, what? 4 reps in.
This is a rap game. I've only watched maybe 3 episodes of Rap Game, but I put.
There's only 4.
Oh, is it?
There's only 4. Yeah.
No, no, they've announced the winner now.
Have they?
Yeah, somebody's won it. I can't remember who. Oh, I know who.
Oh, I
but what I don't know is one. Because they kept threatening to dash people off if they were crap. And that guy Payne, the white guy, he should have got thrown out because he kept messing up his lines. So I don't know if he saw it through to the end.
No, I didn't.
But there's a guy from Scotland that was good. And there was
a guy. You're talking about the UK one?
The UK one.
That one, no, the US one, there's only 4 reps on that.
Oh,
one.
Is it?
Yeah,
oh,
that
okay.
There's only 4 reps.
Yeah. Because I saw an interview with T.I. recently because he was saying that Iggy Azalea is like the biggest blemish on his career.
Yeah. That's harsh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he's had a lot of weapons charges and done a lot of stuff.
You could argue she brought him to the mainstream.
Yeah, I think she made a couple...
No, she didn't bring him to the mainstream, but she brought him back.
No one apart from rap...
She was basically his Eminem, like, in for want of a better word. Like, he wasn't really making music when he brought her through. So she re-elevated his platform for whatever. But the thing is, I think she made a few questionable lines, like, I'm your slave master or something like that.
She had a Twitter beef with, like, Q-Tip.
Yeah.
Because people were calling her out saying, why is she not speaking about Ferguson and all that type of stuff?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I'm just a rapper. I shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
But not in a rude way, just in a way like, I don't really know about this. It's not my beef.
Yeah.
But people piled in on her and said, well, you know, if you're in the game, you got to speak on it.
So
Q-Tip went off on her. Like, OG, Q-Tip. Everyone was back in it.
Yeah. I'll watch it. I mean, the one I've just finished, I don't know if you've heard about it, is on Amazon Prime, though. It's The Boys.
Oh, mate, I fucking love The Boys.
It's probably the best show I've watched this year.
It's so funny.
Is that a panel show?
No. It's
basically... It's Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's take on superhero films.
So do you ever see Hancock with Will Smith when he was just a bastardly superhero?
Yeah.
Think of that on steroids. So basically superheroes are a thing. They're commercialised.
All I'm going to say is the Spice Girls episode.
Yeah. Mate, every episode was good. But
you say that watching it the second time. The first time around, when you watch the first episode, you're going to be a bit like...
Yeah.
But once you get to like episode 2, 3, 4, then it just goes.
And I'm not thinking.
What's the idea? What's the concept?
So basically, they're superheroes. It's commercialised. So they're on. There's only a few, but they open theme parks, they save people. Okay. It's so commercialised where they've got a team that tell them where crime's going to occur based on stats. They do it. But the thing is, the superheroes, it's all a fake. Like, they are complete bastardly people. They are like total awful, awesome. Awful people. The boys. And like, as an example, so they've got like the Avengers version called the Seven. Oh, and they're like the signature of superheroes. And one of them retires. So then they audition and get like a new girl. And she's like a small town girl who thinks it's all glitz and glamour. And then quite quickly she realises...
What's his name? Chase, whatever.
The Deep.
The Deep. So he's played by one of the guys who was in like Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
So it's like total heart. Honestly, what Seth and Evan do to him in this series is fucking...
I want to tell you, because I'll have to tell you, because if I tell you, this will hook you, right? But like, he's showing her around. Like, this is because they're in this massive... The company's called Voight, and they like sign all the superheroes to contract and run them. And he's showing her around, and then the main head of the Seven is this guy called Homelander, who's basically Superman. Everyone loves him.
Imagine Superman, but also then mixed in with military contracts and fucking Mr. America.
So the underlying thing is whether the superhero should be able to fight in the army, right? Because they're not at the moment. But the funny bit is, the other superhero, he could like talk to dolphins and swim and stuff. And he goes, oh, I bet you loved Homelander growing up. And she's looking out the window and she's like, actually, I kind of had a crush on you. And then she turns around and his pants off and he's just wanking. He's just wanking.
That's not the worst bit of that though, because there's another character called Translucent. And he's basically the invisible man, but he can only be invisible when he's naked.
Yeah.
And there's this brilliant bit because they're all, she, like, after this, she goes into the bathroom and she runs into Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And whatever. And then she's like trying to sort herself out or whatever. And then Wonder Woman walks out. And she walks out. She just goes, Translucent, you're a bastard. And the guy just is completely naked in the girl's bathroom.
He finished me because he's wanking. And then she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, look, you've just made it to the seven and I'm basically second in command. And I can...
if you want to get through.
I can make you, like, go, you know, disappear as quickly and, like, think about how your mum would feel about it, you know? All I'm thinking is, honestly,
The whole thing's fucking...
It's crazy.
Carl Urban spends the entire time trying to do a British accent and can't.
Yeah.
Carl Urban, you know, the guy who's, he plays Bones in Star Trek, he was Judge Dredd, he's... Just massive Australian.
It's a terrible English accent.
But I think it's intentionally bad.
Yeah,
100% it's on purpose.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
So the thing that surprised it, I think Amazon for the first time have renewed something for two seasons. So they've already said they're making a 2 and 3.
Yes.
Instead of just like the two. And it's funny because I watched the first episode and I wasn't sold on it. And I was with Zeke and T. And they were like, nah, you got to persevere.
Yeah.
The next day I watched the second episode and I was like, I'm hooked. And then they started screwing me, so I had to, like, mute the group. But it's the way they think it through. It's kind of, in my mind, I think the reason why I like it is, it's kind of how I think the world works.
Yeah.
Because they're bastards, and they're, like, they got their own club that only they're allowed to go to, where they do, like, gay stuff, threesomes, all of that stuff.
I think that's what it is,
and they're, like, the people, the real world don't want to know the truth. They want superheroes, so we give them that.
So this is the Football Fans Podcast with myself, Jordan. We had a week off last week because I was away and I couldn't figure out anybody good enough to cover me, basically.
How long was that?
10 seconds before you blew smoke up your own arse. Congratulations.
Well, more of an indictment of the lack of cover that we've got on.
You could have had Akin do it again.
Oh, yeah. Didn't think of him.
Oh.
But we're back this week. Here we are. Don't forget, we're across all the socials, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. You know what to do. And subscribe to us via iTunes or Spotify. This week on the pod, I'm joined by a regular Chelsea fan. Gabriel, what are you saying, G?
Yeah. I'm in good shape. I mean, I wish I'd hear last week because I'd have been in better shape.
Well,
but we can
touch over last week because as you text me in the week, it was probably the best week to do the pod.
Yeah.
There's so much things to talk about. And it was the one week we didn't do the pod. So
yeah. And, you know, we'll make sure we get Tammy watching as well.
No, we can swerve Tammy watch. this week. And we've also got United fan Marvin. First time of the season. What are you saying?
I'm really well, fella. How you doing?
I'm good, mate. We're going to come to you in just a moment because, yeah, I'm going to make up for last week as well. I forgot about you. Don't worry about that.
I did.
And...
Wait. Number one, I didn't imply you forgot about me. Yeah, you were like, don't worry, we're coming back to you. I was not concerned at all. I know you're definitely coming to me.
Good.
In fact, I know probably that's why I'm here. But I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
Good. And also making his debut this season. First time, this season. And from the Anfield Wrap, Neil, how are you doing, sir?
Very good indeed. How could I not be? I'm looking forward to Marvin. A lot of pressure on Marvin.
There's a lot of pressure on Marvin, to be fair.
Not if you're going to be honest. You can't really feel pressure if you're just going to give a frank and honest opinion on the situation, which I'm more than happy to do.
Okay, so let's just get into it straight away then.
Yeah, let's get into it. I'm going home after this. Let's just do it.
Let's go through last week. Was there anything in particular you wanted to start with? Because it was, you know, City losing... There was Liverpool in their last-minute winner.
I think there's no better place to start than St. James's Park.
I think so too. So kick us off. What did you make of the game?
Quite a dull game. Newcastle had a game plan and United didn't have enough guile or creativity to break it down. Good to see the Longstaff boy get on the score sheet. I don't know if that's the one United wanted or not.
I don't think they know.
It wasn't.
United. I mean, apart from when they played us the first game, and even to a certain extent, then every week I've seen United and think, man, this team looks bad, and it's it's funny because we were so open that we, it's hard to, we almost gifted them four goals. But I look at the way they play.
Oh, God.
I look at like,
four lucky goals. Can we just
come
just
no,
got
no, no, by no, four no, lucky no, goals no, over there? Yeah. Four lucky goals.
Four lucky goals.
Four lucky goals.
It's the, four lucky goals. We've got four lucky goals, one goal score once, you know, it all happens to us. but I just don't.
Can we be just realistic as we talk about this? Four lucky goals, Joe. Come on, you can't allow that.
But we just don't. We don't.
Oh, well, you know what I'm going to say is happening that 1-0. If 4-0's lucky, you know what I mean?
But I just don't see United breaking down any team which can defend half decently. I just don't see any, even when all of the big names come back.
Neil, for me, the biggest disrespect that I thought that Newcastle took in that game was that they thought to themselves, no one's heard of this second Longstaff brother. He's a kid, but this is the game's giving me his debut in. Not let's bring him on for the last 5 minutes of any other game. We're going to start him in maybe the most important position on the pitch, in the centre of midfield against United. I just thought that's so rude.
There's loads of sides that are playing United, and what they're doing is they're sort of spending the first 20 minutes firstly trying to remember who's on the United team sheet, because
true
it's
that.
Passing me by most weeks.
True that.
I mean, Pereira could walk in here now, and I presume he worked here rather than he was a footballer. But there's a thing that's going on, and what's happening is sides are suddenly going, God, they're not very good. And there's sort of 15 minutes where everyone's sort of playing Manchester United, and then they're realising they're not very good. And some realise it a bit too late. Leicester showed them too much respect. But there is a concerning thing there. And yeah, United, Newcastle, just you watch them sort of realise as the game wore on, hang on, we're fine here. This is, they can't, and it's the first two-thirds of the pitch, United are all right, they're quite good, they might be top six level. But in the final third, they've got absolutely nothing. So what that leads to is sides just begin to take a few more risks, throw a couple more men forward, and before you know where you are, you've got the second long staff of the long staff pair making it 1-0, and at no point watching the game did you ever think United are going to get an equaliser. United could still be playing now, and they wouldn't be getting an equaliser.
I don't know about that, because we had chances before they scored, right? Maguire missed
the
complete.
Maguire one?
Yeah, he missed a complete sitter.
I'll take that one.
So let's not go on like we couldn't hit a barn door.
There were a few half chances.
But there's nothing from open play, and it's all around the edge of the box. It's not, you know, it's not like you're carving anyone open.
Let me not put any punches here. We're in dire straits, but what I'm not going to do is sit here and go on like there wasn't a chance, at least one, before they'd even scored. And it's not like they had a hatful. They did not have a hatful. De Gea wasn't busy the whole day. So we, like, fair play. We were shit, right? But it's not like Newcastle were amazing.
Oh,
and
no, they're rubbish.
That makes sense,
to be clear.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, everyone's going on, like,
United are shit,
but it's not like the teams are better than us. We're just shitter,
I heard someone say that's the battle of the two worst managers in the Prem.
Tash on Steve Bruce.
It really is, actually.
I mean, it's funny, though, you can only work with what he's got.
I get loads of questions. People go, oh, Marvin, you take him as a manager, you take him as a manager. And I say, no, Steve Bruce is where I draw the line. We're pretty much...
Steve Bruce is beyond the pale.
We're pretty much...
I don't know, you know.
It's like, would you like this dark, this brown shit, or this slimy brown shit? Like, they're both crap, but that's where I draw the line. I pretty much take the other 18 Prem managers, but Steve Bruce is where I say...
Right, we'll
no
come
more.
Back to United in a bit, because we've got a whole section on United later on.
So what was that? Just like a warm-up?
that was stretching our legs.
That was just last
You know what, Jordan? Next time I want an agenda.
that was a recap from last week. Right. Neil, was it a penalty? 2-1 against... Who'd you beat?
Leicester.
Was it a pen?
I thought it was enough for one. We've had them not given, you get them given. It's all right, he gives it, it's fine.
You take it.
I mean, we battered Leicester. Match of the day didn't show. Because it's an annoying game. Well, it's not annoying, we won, so, you know, everyone can chill out. But, like, match of the day made it look like it was an even game. And then they put their expected goals thing up, and it was like 3.5 Liverpool, 0.1 Leicester. And then we go over some analysis, and they say, well, Liverpool got a bit lucky there with the penalty at the end. We murdered them for an hour, and then we were shattered. Our legs fell off big time. Three or four players were goosed. And we just couldn't quite. We kept them at arm's length, but we couldn't create much. And then, off the one decent chance that they had, they scored. Fair play to them to go goal. They do really well for it. But then, what Leicester should have actually tried to win the game, and instead he does Choudhury rather than doing Damari Gray. He should have done Damari Gray in all seriousness. The best way in which Leicester could have got a draw or got a win out of that game would have been by trying to score a second goal. And instead, what they do is they fall back. Liverpool, we put a little bit of pressure on, and then, I mean, you can't kick people from behind in the penalty area. So you can do that. Well, he's gone down easy. Yeah, but you've really given him, you know, you've made it really easy for him. He's going to start walloping people from behind. So down he goes. And then Milner cool as anything. And genuinely, honestly, the game was really, really one-sided, but it wasn't on telly, it wasn't on live television. So if it'd been on live television, the best chance of the game was Salah just after half-time, and they didn't show it on Match of the Day. It was literally the best chance of the game, and it didn't get shown. They've only got 10 minutes, but they tried to make it act like, because they wanted to tell the story of, even to be fair, like, you know, it determined Liverpool, focused Liverpool, get a 2-1 from the jaws of a draw. That's what they were trying to tell the story of. In all honesty, Liverpool controlled the game, better side throughout. Leicester turned up with a certain game plan, but at the key moment, they needed to double down. If they'd have doubled down, as I say, we were shattered. You know, Fabinho was on his last legs. He's played a lot of football. When Alden got subbed, he was goosed. Firmino was goosed. Trent, God bless him. You know, subbing him would have been a mercy, to be honest with you. The quality was still there, but the legs, the body just wasn't.
Just couldn't do it.
But, you know, we hung on in, and it's, you know, it's a great 3 points because they're a good side.
Indeed.
It was just such a poor decision by old Brighton. Like, I was... Yeah, like, it was almost like... And I agree, Liverpool deserved the win, but to get to 1-1,
yep.
I'm not saying go defensive, but it's a poor footballing brain there.
Just
right?
play smart.
Yeah, and I was disappointed because I don't think he was going to score. And
He's turning away from goal, and he's going away from goal. You've got four defenders around him. I mean, he might be able to lay it off, but he's going away from goal.
And now, what's it set up now? So if you beat United, do you equal the record or equal? Okay.
I think you equal it, yeah. You don't beat it, do you?
I think we equal it, but I mean, that's not the point. It's all about winning the next three and then beating City. That's what it's all about. It's all about basically win the next three and beat City.
We'll come to that. And finally, City lost.
George, you're teeing up a lot of stuff. Are we going to get to anything?
I'm wrapping up the week we missed.
All right, fine.
That's what I'm doing. And City lost,
Yeah.
What did you think of that game? And are City in trouble? Or just a bad few weeks?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because at first I thought, nah, City will come back and it'll level itself up. But Liverpool have been so consistent. I mean, Neil will correct me because I only watched Match of the Day, so I thought they were quite pedestrian against Leicester, so maybe I'll take that as a point. But generally speaking, I've seen Liverpool and I've seen them be amazingly efficient and not necessarily at their best height of maybe what they were kind of 18 months ago, like when they were blitzing teams and they played slightly differently. But when you're that clinical and you're that efficient, you know that's a problem. And I just think that maybe it will get to the point where City... get back to where they're gone, if they buy a centre back or if they reshape their team.
But it might
be too much. Yeah. And just because of how efficient Liverpool are.
Okay, we'll do City next week. And also, we've not done really Chelsea yet, so I'm aware that we've not done Chelsea yet, but you're here every week, so we'll do Chelsea in depth a bit more next week.
Showing you a lot of value, G. You know you're worse. You're turning down
this week. No, we've got Newcastle next week, so we should be all right.
Watch out for that Matty Longstaff, I tell you, he's a complete goon, that one.
So, gents, I know we have a discussion on the two top managers. We've got you here, Neil. And I'm wondering, because they've both been so consistent for 18 months, 2 years now, at City and at Liverpool. And there's not much to separate them. One's a Premier League champion. One's a European Cup winner. I'll start actually with you, Marvin, this one. If you could start a team from scratch, and you're the owner, and you could have either Pep or Klopp, who would you have and why?
It's a tough one. I think right now I'd probably go for Klopp, and that's purely based on the fact that you're saying if I'm building a team from scratch, and that's largely what United need to do, right? And I think the challenge, and I know people will criticise me, and I love the criticism, so bring it on, but I still think Pep's always had a decent foundation to build greatness on. And, you know, I still feel like you can't underestimate the Messi factor at Barcelona. And I feel like the difference between the two, and fair enough, Klopp hasn't won the league or whatever, but I think the difference between the two is the fact that I think Klopp would come in, know who he wants, knows how he want to play, and that person, the people that he'd want, wouldn't necessarily be the big names. He wouldn't need as big a budget as Pep. And I think people sort of underestimate the infrastructure, particularly at City, that Pep surrounded himself with all ex-Barca. And if Pep bought the whole infrastructure that he's built at City, maybe. But if you said to me right now who I'd want, I'd probably go for Klopp. And the thing that really annoys me about Klopp, because you know how much I hate Liverpool.
Yeah,
and for those who have never heard me on
everybody
the
everybody knows by now you hate Liverpool. Yeah,
I really hate Liverpool. But Klopp's actually quite likeable. I think even when he... even when he's going mental, I can kind of see why he's going mental. I think he backs the players. I think he's done a nice balance of bringing through youth as well as bringing players through who are probably at clubs not big enough for them, like Mane from Southampton. And I think if you put Foden in the Liverpool team, he probably would have got a lot more games and his development would be in a better place. And I think a part of it maybe is Pep's, the expectations that sit with Pep. People say he didn't win the Champions League with Bayern or he didn't do this, but Klopp's the guy I'd go for.
Obviously, Neil, you have Klopp, but this is why I kind of made the question starting a team from scratch, because I do think Klopp is more geared towards Liverpool than Pep would have been. Bearing in mind his personality, if you're starting a team from scratch, of the two, who would you want managing your team?
From scratch, I'd go with Klopp, but I think Guardiola is the best manager of elite footballers in the world, and I think that he's the best coach of elite footballers in the world, and I think he's the best able to get the very best footballers to play a style of football that no one can touch. I think he's the manager in the world who's best suited to attempting perfection. I don't think Klopp attempts perfection. I think Klopp embraces mistakes. And I think that the two managers have got a lot in common, and I actually think they've learned a lot from each other across the last sort of 6 years. Because it's worth remembering they were both in Germany at the same time, and now they're both in England at the same time. And, you know, I think that a lot of decisions Klopp's made at Liverpool have been in the context of the fact that at some point he's known that if he's going to win a league, he's going to have to beat a Guardiola team. So, for instance, you don't buy a centre-half until you can get Van Dijk, because you need the very best one because you're trying to beat a Guardiola team. I think if you see a lot of Klopp's decisions at Liverpool through the prism of the fact that he knows what it is to compete with Pep Guardiola, a lot of his decisions make a lot more sense. But I don't think you can argue with when City play the football that City can play, it is the nearest thing you will get to perfection. It's actually arguably, in some senses, not as much fun. You know, the absolute chaos of Liverpool, for instance, beating City 4-3, or I think Roma 5-2 was what was being alluded to by Gabriel earlier on when he said a certain type of Liverpool football isn't quite as exciting as watching Manchester City just cut a side apart and yet another forward's got yet another tap in from inside the 6-yard box. But that's perfect football, and that's what Guardiola can do. Where there's a question around Guardiola is how good is he when he can't completely control it, when it isn't absolutely perfect. And that's what I think he's finding a little bit difficult at the minute. And so, for instance, one of the arguments that was put together after the Wolves defeat was, if anything, they were just too conscious of the defensive flaws. And the reason why is because he wants perfection. He needs complete control. That's the way in which he is. He couldn't embrace the idea against Wolves of maybe we've got to take a few more risks rather than the other way around. And therefore, they weren't able to create as they normally can, City, because they were a little bit conservative, because he does not want to take chances. Guardiola. So he's able to create a side that can score 8 against Watford on the one hand, but on the other hand, if he can't completely control the game and grab it, I think they're less good. And I think that is imbued in his players. I think City, you know, if City aren't winning on the hour mark, I always think there's something on here. Whereas if we're not winning on the hour mark, I think it'll come. We'll be all right. But we're not going to go 4-0 up against a side in the first half an hour. It's just not what we're going to do. But we're just not going to do that. That's not what we're going to do. And I think that that's the difference between these sides and between these managers and their outlooks. But, I mean, they're both brilliant. But, yeah, Guardiola, if you're saying to me, not only do I have the pick of the club, I have the pick of the world's players, then Guardiola will get me a more perfect brand of football quicker. It's just what happens when the wheel doesn't quite turn as smoothly.
Frank or Klopp?
Frank, of course. Obviously.
No, you know,
we talk
what?
About eating competitions.
No, I mean, these guys have summed it up perfectly. If it was unlimited resources and, you know, situation exactly how you want it, you go with Pep. If I want someone to build a team, I'd go with Klopp.
Could you just say Pep just to mix it up a little bit, just to, you know?
Do you want me to be honest?
I'm joking.
But I think the answer does change. I think what steered us is building from scratch, right? Yeah. And it's largely, I mean, I think you saw all the stats of the Klopp team that he started on his first game versus now, and he's basically rebuilt that team, right?
So squad.
Yeah. Well, not even rebuilt the team, because obviously time goes on, but he's redeveloped the style of play from something like they're unrecognisable, the two. And I think it's demonstrated it can be done, whereas, no disrespect to Pep, but the three teams that I've witnessed him manage, none of them have been in the doldrums, right? Like, they've all been at a level where to Neil's point about, you know, having unlimited resources and being able to attract those elite players, that he can get it done.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah. No, I was just gonna, I mean, if just to give some credit to Klopp there, because I know we've talked about Pep quite a bit, but if I look at, if you said, you know, 5 years ago, you have James Milner, Jordan Henderson in your midfield, and that midfield was like, was winning game after game in the Premier League, running Man City close, you would have thought that come. But what Klopp does so well is find what's good about that player and get the maximum out of it.
Yeah.
Like
because they're arguably the two biggest weakest links, though, aren't they?
Yeah, but they do their job every week and they do it efficiently well. I mean, how old is Milner? Must be like 70 now. He's
the best player on the pitch against Leicester.
Yeah, exactly. And he's still at that high level. So I think that's
waiting on a contract, though, isn't he?
Yeah, I think they'll hang on, but I think he'll get his next year. If not, he'll just move Lallana into the Milner role as official old man. Henderson takes one step closer to Lallana in the official role of official old man, and we'll be absolutely fine.
If Pep wins the Champions League this year,
yeah,
and Klopp wins the Premier League this year,
yeah,
do you think they'll both be in the Premier League next season?
I think Klopp definitely will be. I actually look at Klopp and think there is an affinity with Liverpool, but then he's got his contract situation where is it next year?
2022.
I think he stays at least until 2022. I think Pep is the type of guy who would want to go out in the blaze of glory, say he wants to go and take a sabbatical or something and do TV for a year, then come back at the next opportunity that comes. But I think Klopp stays until the end of his contract.
I asked the question, Neil, because the guy at work who supports Liverpool, Scouse Joe, he mentioned that he thinks that if Klopp wins the Premier League this year, he thinks he'll go because he'll see it as a bit like what G said about Pep. That's almost job done. I've won the Champions League. I've won the Premier League that everybody's wanted. Cool. Done my four or five years he's been at Liverpool now?
Be five by that point.
I want a break. I want a year or two out. I'm gone. Do you think there's any chance that if you win the Premier League, he will, you know, leave early?
There's a slight chance, but I think he'll see the contract that he signed as a serious thing, and I think he'll want to see it through. I think the key thing about him is whether or not he's enjoying it, and I think it's as simple as that. I think he sees it as he's a training ground manager. He's always going to be a training ground manager. He's not going to do an Alex Ferguson and go upstairs and find an office and go from there and only be seen every now and again. He wants to be on the training ground, and I think while he has the enthusiasm to get on the training ground every day and be there every day and be the first there and the last to leave, as he reputedly is, that sort of vibe off him, I think he'll stay and he'll still want to do it. I think at some point he does want a break. He was meant to be having a break between Dortmund and Liverpool, and it got sort of eaten up a little bit because we gave him the shout, but I think he will want a break at some point. I think from a Liverpool point of view, this is why you don't do things that are going to piss Klopp off. So, you know, Liverpool have done the US tour in the summer, 2 years on the bounce. It wouldn't surprise me if there's voices at Liverpool that would like it to be Asia next time, but it ends up being the United States again because he prefers it for the time zones and all that sort of stuff. That wouldn't surprise me. I think, you know, Klopp is the most important person at that football club. So I think as long as there's no one doing his head and making him do things he doesn't want to do and sort of undermining his enthusiasm, then fine. What I think might happen if Liverpool won the league is it wouldn't surprise me if there was a slightly more shocking exodus of players than some might think. And that might well be driven by Klopp as much as it's driven by the players. The idea that he needs to freshen them, the idea that he needs to do it again from scratch, that he needs to have that battle from scratch so that his voice doesn't begin to tire with those players. That wouldn't surprise me. And the Dortmund, I think the chief executive was on record a couple of weeks ago saying that they had a decision to make when Klopp was going to leave because the players had had enough of Klopp. And they had a decision to make that you either keep the players or you lose the manager. And they decided to lose the manager. And he says now they'd rather lose the players. But it wouldn't surprise me if something a bit stark happens if Liverpool won the Premier League. But, you know, we're sitting here and it's, you know, we're in the October international break. Trust me, there's a lot that can go wrong now.
Indeed. Marvin, final question on this one. I think the way you judge a top manager is also legacy. So I think one of the things that my club and definitely your club are suffering from is how our previous managers left the clubs. If Klopp...
Our club did it correctly.
Almost arguably.
We won a league. He went out correctly. Your legacy for Wenger.
No, he won a league, but the club was not in a good situation.
I know, but I don't really like the comparison between the two. Like your guy... he dragged it out.
We're comparing shades of shit here, but anyway.
No, our shade of shit is significantly a nicer shade.
I mean, he's able to say his shade of shit is silver.
Yeah. Well, I say it wrong. the manager did it the right way. Probably not best for the club.
But because Wenger and Ferguson were so embedded in the club, unlike any others, I think they're responsible for what happens when they leave.
Okay, I hear you.
So if we take those two as examples, if Klopp and Pep were to leave this season, having won the two trophies I just named earlier on, which club do you think is set up for success for the next 4 to 5 years without those managers?
I mean, I'd probably go Liverpool again. And I'm just basing that on, actually, I mean, Pep's doing all right to get the older lot out, but I still don't see the youth coming through in the same way. I think there's quite a lot, and there's a lot of players that I've seen in the younger Liverpool teams that are yet to break through. I think if you look at a lot of the Pep players, Fernandinho, I think they gave another year, David Silva, a lot of them are aging. I think there's still a problem at centre-back, which Liverpool do not have. I think it's much of a muchness because City have unlimited resources, right? So I think...
But so did United. Pretty much unlimited.
Yeah,
money doesn't necessarily...
But the thing is, I think United, there's a few similarities there because the team that Fergie left, there was still quite a few people that were ready to pack it in anyway. And I think City have... the same. That being said, credit to Pep because like Rodri and some of the people that he's brought through, you can see who he's trying to replace and where. I mean, even Aguero, he can't go on forever. I don't know if Jesus is the right guy to replace him. And I think some of the youngsters, and I the reason why I mentioned Foden a couple of times is because I've watched him in the under-21s a bit, and that guy's crying out for consistent football. He's not getting it because Pep has that pressure to deliver a Champions League now, and to go with what he has. De Bruyne's injury record's not great. So there's a lot of pieces that I think without that Pep, to Neil's point about managing elite players, and there's not like Klopps and Peps don't grow on trees, right? I don't know if another manager would be able to get that last pound of their flesh out of those people that are coming more to the sort of twilight stage.
Neil and G, just briefly, same question. Do you feel Liverpool... out of Liverpool and City, the next guy that comes in, who has the easier job of keeping what the previous guy has done work going on for the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, see, I would disagree with Marvin, actually go with City, but then it's difficult because it's not so much because of what Pep's done, it's because of the resources that they haven't. Yeah, so I'd say Klopp has implemented a better legacy, but at the same time, Pep, the City job would be a better job for someone.
I mean, the youth infrastructure at City is insane. But I guess, and like the reason why I say that is because I was in Manchester for longer than I should have been, and I did get to see it. And that the sort of facilities there, you see the League One and League Two sides are nowhere near it. And I think that ability to draw in not just from England, but young talent from across the globe because of just those facilities. It, in theory, you would say City are in a good place, but I think I just judge it on what are you actually bringing through, and I think they're still struggling. I think Sancho's a good example where he was like, I'm out of here, right? And they fought for him. They've put can't go to United clauses and all sorts of things, when actually what that young fella wanted was a roadmap to getting into the first team, and they can't do it. They'll always buy the next man at the moment with all the facilities they have.
Just briefly, Neil, how difficult is the next Liverpool manager's job going to be in transitioning in his style of play at Liverpool? Or do you think the next guy has to carry on the work of Klopp?
I think he has to carry on the work of Klopp. But what I would point out is the vast majority of players who played for Liverpool this season have been over 26. So we can, a lot of them have been 26. Liverpool are very much 26 to 29, most Liverpool players are. But this is a peak years football team. So there's only Alexander-Arnold and Gomez, really, Divock Origi, a tiny amount, who were 24 and under, who featured particularly for Liverpool this season. So I think, yes, Klopp, you know, Klopp has developed a lot of footballers from the age of 22 to 23 to be the players they are now. There's no argument about that. But what there now is there's now no one playing for Liverpool who's 22 or 23, literally no one. No one who's 22 or 23 has kicked a ball for Liverpool this season, apart from Gomez, as I said before, so none of the exciting stuff. So it's worth bearing in mind, I think Liverpool, you know, I think Klopp's brought this team to fruition over a period of time. It might have two more seasons at the level it's currently at, but at some sort of point there's got to be a bit of renovation, whether Klopp stays or doesn't.
Okay, let's move on now to let's go United next. I will start with you, June, this
one. Why are you zooming in on me? I saw you turn the little thing. Like, whatever view you had of me before, it was fine. Like, yeah.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
G, how far are United, kind of going on from that last question, how far away are Manchester United from a sustained success?
I don't know what sustained success is in the modern era. I don't think.
Well, you would say that.
I don't think there's ever going to be United of the 90s again. I think there's always going to be a bit of circles. But in terms of United being competitive again, I don't think they're as far away as it makes out, because there's always a cycle. If you look at what Neil's kind of outlined, and if you look at, you know, if Pep was to move on, I think teams are only ever like one window away from kind of dropping off just a level where other teams can catch up. And I think if United actually had a good pre-season and replaced three or four key positions, and not necessarily with big name stars, but just with
just the people, right players,
the right players who are really effective at what they do, then I think they could be in the mix again. The problem
Define
is...
Defining the mix.
In the mix, actually, for competing for the title. The problem is that, you know, you look at the players that they have got there who are the high-level players who'd supplement the new players that they're bringing in. De Gea's in poor form and Pogba is in poor form, and you're looking at it and they're probably looking around the team saying, these guys ain't doing it. And you just wonder, can you keep them enchanted for long enough to get enough guys in to kind of be a good supporting act or push the team forward? Mm-hmm. But apart from that, I think, you know, if they'd had a good window this summer, I think they did when they bought Maguire and all those guys. But if they actually had a good window this summer, I actually think they could have competed. It's hard to.
So you think if they'd have had bought in the right three players, summer just gone, they'd have been back in the mix for.
Look,
top four title.
At least third. If they'd have got a Sancho in, for instance, this summer, I mean, couldn't have happened. Yeah, but could be, you know. I don't know who the centre back would be. They got Maguire. He's not the guy. But if they'd have got a good centre back in, if they give them Van Dijk, Sancho, and a striker, I think they're in the mix.
Really?
I absolutely do. I really don't think it's as far fetched as you think it is. Especially considering how badly, not badly because it's hard to say badly, but how mixed City have started.
Neil, come to you last, Marvin. In terms of years, A, do you agree with G? And if not, how many years do you think they're away from actually being the Man United of old? I'm not talking about 15, 20 years. Them days are gone. But I'm talking about 3-4 years where they're in the mix of top 4/title race.
I think that you're probably looking at get the next managerial appointment right in a number of different ways. And then you're looking at 2 summers, because there's still players to get shut of. It's not as simple as just sort of saying get people in. They've still got to get shut of people as well. But, you know, there's a journey there where I think if they could find a way to recruit 6, 7, 8 lads between 22 and 25, as said before, who can then mature with the right manager who's able to sell that vision, then I think they could. Then, you know, it's not like it's a year. It's not like it's forever. Let's get it right. The issue they've got, though, is they've not got much room for manoeuvre. And that's where... That's the situation that they've ended up in. There's not a ton of room for manoeuvre. So now, you know, you're in a situation where they've made a tiny little bit of a mess of the summer window for a variety of reasons. And it, like, the damage feels greater than it would do if they'd have made the similar mess of a summer window 3 years ago. Because all the time, every single time where you don't get it right enough at the minute, you take, it's not just the idea that you stand still, you actually take 3 steps back. And also everyone who's around takes 3 steps back. So now you've got Phil Jones basically singing he's getting sacked in the morning on the sidelines because everyone, no one believes. And the thing about that they've got at the minute, United, with the manager, it's not just the manager. I think it's right the way through the club, is that no one believes currently that they're on the road. That you can not be on the road, but if people believe, you can force yourself to be, or it can take a period of time. But that lack of belief, it goes everywhere. Like, genuinely, at the minute, what's Harry Maguire thinking? Because this is the big move of his career, and he hasn't half got it wrong.
It's funny, because someone said that to me last night. Someone was saying, do you reckon Maguire like regrets that move already? Yeah.
Whereas Wan-Bissaka is able to look at it and maybe play the long game. He's youngish.
I've got years in there.
Maguire's 27, and if we haven't talking it about 2 years, suddenly he's 29. And also you just end up. The other issue they've got at the minute, this United side, is they're not half getting used to getting beat. I remember watching Liverpool sides lose 14 games a league season. Consistently lose 2-3 years on the bounce, lost 14 league games, and And it takes a lot. It takes a lot to drag that out of a team to make it feel otherwise. And the longer it goes on, the harder it is to drag it out, even for good players. And there are good players in there. I like McTominay. I know a lot of people don't, but I think he's tidy. And I think he's exactly the sort of player who, in 2007, plays centre mid for Manchester United, gets 35 games. They win the league and the European Cup, and everyone's telling you he's crap. And you're thinking, yeah, he's got 35 games there in a team that's won the league and the European Cup. The problem he's got now, though, is that he's having to be the main man in the centre midfield, where they're getting beat three in every seven times they take to the pitch, and that is damaging. And the thing about it is that it needs to get arrested quickly. If they are going to be able to turn it around in two windows, it's got to get a lot better quick. And also, if you were Jadon Sancho and Man United turn up and they offer you all the money in the world, should I go and be the saviour? Why should I go and save yous?
No way. Marvin, I want to answer here. Southgate, Dyche or Ollie?
Moody, this, like, I mean, I feel like we might have to stage an intervention. It's moody. He's just come to talk about footy and this is bullying, Jordan.
To put it back for 1 week only.
But Jordan, you know what you've done?
It's bullying.
You've picked three people that I have zero respect for, zero interest in. I'd rather we just go into administration.
rather we just end it.
Yeah. No, I mean,
start again.
Yeah. I'm, to be honest, F the drive-by. I'm not answering the question. I want none of those managers at my team.
All right, I'll let you off on that one. Are you one of these people, United fans, that believes that if you sacked Ole tomorrow and got someone else in, that manager would get enough of a bounce out of, inverted commas, good players to get them back into the top eight comfortably, at least? Or do you think there's no point in second order Gunnar Solskjaer because the problems above the manager are so entrenched in the club? It doesn't really matter. If Pep Guardiola comes up tomorrow, you're going to finish.
Yeah, and you know what? Fair play to the rest of the panelists, because I actually sat here admiring the optimism. Like, G said, you know, a few pieces. Neil said two summers. I'm looking at the long game. Like, the person that he was talking about, no one's on the road of belief. I am firmly not on that road of belief. So my minimum is 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Minimum. I'm comfortable.
Harry
McGuire's
33.
I mean, yeah, 5 years minimum. I'm comfortable with my children who are 1 and 3 being in secondary school. And that's when it counts, because that's when you start getting a bit leery at football. So they can go through the primary years in this terrible time. But by secondary school, by the time my youngest is in secondary school, can we be competing?
Oh,
again?
Breaking news. England have taken the lead. I don't know who scored.
It's definitely Jordan Pickford.
It looks shot out like it was Jordan Pickford.
I think it's Rashford.
It's Rashford. Oh, no.
Rashy.
Why say no for?
I mean, I'm just surprised.
It's different. You say, wow, that's a surprise.
That's your penalty or something.
This is not very good pod listening, but
it's
anyway,
terrible, we are where we are.
Let's have a listen to this. Ross Barkley, I'll do some commentary. Ross Barkley. Rashy.
Oh, this Rashy. Is definitely.
Oh, let's put him in his ass. Oh, wow.
Lovely.
Have some of that.
Oh, wow.
Still okay. 5 years, but have some of that. How do we be? Still.
It's terrible goalkeeping.
That's awful
terrible.
Goalkeeping.
Terrible. Anyway. No one's going to cut to Jordan Pickford. He also knows a lot about awful goalkeeping.
So 5 to 10 years is the game. And actually, I think to your point is yes to both. So I think we should sack Ole immediately. Like, immediately. Like, if I left here and we sacked him, even Neil, a Liverpool fan, I'd take you all to the pub. You could have whatever you wanted, and I would take it. But ultimately, at the moment, the club is rotten to the core, and I don't think we can substantially see the change that we need as long as the ownership is how it stands. And that includes Woodward particularly. I mean, I would keep the ownership. Like, if you ask me Woodward versus the ownership, I'd get rid of Woodward immediately. He's someone, he reminds me of me playing champ with Barcelona, right? Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to try. And I think, you know, the bottom line is when I think it's an obvious example of where somebody has achieved good things from a commercial standpoint, and they think that skill set can transpose across a whole different kettle of fish. And I think some people forget just how many times, from a transfer perspective, we've been embarrassed, how we've been used as a pawn for other people to get longer contracts. You look at the players that are underperforming, most of them are on more money than some of the Liverpool players who are playing fantastic football. Mm-hmm. And you will need to get those players off the books, or at least get them playing. You need a manager that has a vision, who has an ideology that we can get behind, because right now, Ole's still riding off the bounce that he had, which was people that were playing under a Jose Mourinho cloud of not being able to express themselves. And I genuinely think that there is so much at the club has to change. And I think I'm being generous by saying 5 years, because if you do, in an ideal world, I think a lot of Man United fans would like the ownership to change. Once that ownership changes, they would then have to put an infrastructure up. And I've said it in a pod before of, as a club, we lived in a Fergie bubble. So to your point about legacy, like director of football and modern day positions that exist in other clubs, does not exist in Manchester United. It still doesn't. And for a new owner to come in, put that in, put the manager in, and then work on not only the youth infrastructure, but the 11 that we have on the pitch, it's a humongous job. It's a humongous job. And I think real United fans would need to really just, I think they need to be comfortable in their own skin that this is going to be a major job that hasn't even started yet.
But Marv, what I'd say to kind of counter that, and I'd probably take Liverpool out of that, although Liverpool haven't won a Prem yet in recent times.
Ever.
Well, okay. But if you look at City's team, Chelsea's team, Leicester, the teams that have won the league, these are pretty much, sometimes, in some cases, there have been teams that have been put together over quite a short period of time. Or managers have come in with different philosophies with a different team and still been able to win. What I'm saying is this long-term 15-year blueprint plan where someone draws it up in their bedroom, and if it doesn't always take that now to win the league.
Yeah, and I agree to an extent, but I think there's a few things. Leicester is, for me, it's just a massive anomaly. So you can't really learn a lot from what happened there, right? We're not talking about a wealthy manager. We're not talking about millions spent. It is an anomaly, right? I think the challenge that we have at Manchester United is just the sheer size of club and expectation. And what I mean by that is, in terms of acquiring players, what we have to pay through wages and infrastructure and just what the club expects, I don't think this is something that could turn on a dime, right? It's too big a task for somebody who, from an owner, director of football, manager, to just take on as a short-term project. Now, I know football's changed and the days of long-term managers has gone, and I'm not saying we need a manager for that 10-year stretch it's going to take, but I think we've sunken to such a low. And to Neil's point, and I can't remember, I think it was Keno or somebody, it might have even been Gary Neville, one of the few things he does say that makes sense, but they used to look across the tunnel at a game and know they've beat the team before they stepped out on the pitch, right? And I guarantee that's what's happening at Liverpool right now, where they're waiting to go onto the field at Anfield and players are on the opposing team thinking, let's just not get beat too badly. That's how it used to be at United, right? I could bet on United home game under Fergie, 9 times out of 10, I'm winning the bet that it's not even worth it because of the odds. And I just think, just as Neil said about the belief in the opposing side now is at fever pitch. And I think it will be at fever pitch for a considerable amount of time. Even when we're starting to turn on good results, people will still think we beat them. And to get that Man United sort of imposing mental will take so much from top to bottom.
Well, Neil, on that point Marvin makes there, I think the Crystal Palace defeat was really interesting, because on that point of belief, it was interesting that Palace were 1-0 up, United got a late-ish equaliser, and then back in the day, teams just think, we'll just take a point. Just take a point, everyone on the gold line, and we'll get out of here with a point. And that would be seen as a bad result for United back in the day, even a 1-1 draw. But they thought, no, we can still win this, even in the 89th minute. And that, for me, was something I just thought that was interesting, because they didn't just revert to taking a point.
Let's get it right. Also, the goal scored by the left back. The point is Stefan Arnold's gone, you know what, we'll have this.
Well, it's not like Van Aanholt is the most disciplined of left-backs, is he?
True.
He's probably the highest scoring.
But usually he's under a manager that's very, very conservative.
Yeah, I agree.
Who'd have been saying to him 9 times out of 10, just get your ass back and clear the ball.
Yeah, and we're talking about Hodgson, right? We're not talking about someone who's super progressive.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think it did tell a bit of a story there. And I think in general, there is just this... The malaise is that the first thing is, it's worth saying, no one looks like they're enjoying it. Mm-hmm. You know, in the most basic sense, no one looks like they're enjoying it. Off the pitch, I mean, I'm going to Old Trafford on Sunday, but I was around Old Trafford recently. Looks crap. Looks dog-eared. Rust. Grey paint. Needs repainting. Honestly, in the most basic sense, there's a hole in the roof. At the minute at Old Trafford, there's a hole in the roof, and they're giving ponchos out to supporters rather than actually deal with the hole in the roof. It's not a metaphor. It feels like a metaphor. It's not a metaphor. It's a thing that's happening at Old Trafford at the minute. And I think that in general, the problem is that I think that there's just a lack of love and care and passion from top to bottom, and that's everybody in the club. And I think that that's not just what's on the pitch, and I think that's where it's become really, really difficult. Don't get me wrong, I think the atmosphere actually on Sunday will be phenomenal at Old Trafford. Yeah, I do. I think it won't be if they go one down.
I'm not ruling out us getting some points as well.
No, I'm not ruling that out either. I think it'll be points. I think United can win.
Or at least a point.
I think they can. No, I think United can win. Because I think it'll be...
Into plural versus singular, so I needed to be clear. He's clearly... He did his English. His English GCSE was solid. So let's be clear.
It's back to the wall stuff, and I think it will be there, and I think that there's nothing... You know, in the way in which when everyone says it's the game that Solskjaer needs, or Solskjaer thinks it's the game the squad needs, in one sense he's right in that the crowd and the team for a period of time will be absolutely full of resilience and desire, and they'll want to demonstrate that back to the wall quality, because these people who turn up to pay money to watch Manchester United love them to pieces. You're going to get to really, I think, really sample that on Sunday. But if it goes wrong, if Liverpool go one or especially two goals ahead, it'll turn completely and be unpleasant.
But I think those fans you're talking about, the United fans, will be ramped up on the weekend, not because they're enthused by supporting their United team, but more... We just can't lose to these lot.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely an element to that, but then I've been in that boat going the other way. I mean, that's the way it works. But also, you do want to sort of say you don't just get to come to our place and saunter around. We're not standing for that. I think there's definitely an element to that, and that's what you'll see, and that's what Solskjaer will get.
And let me be clear, that ethos that Neil's talking about you can't come to our place and saunter around, I don't know if there's the personas in our club that will be like...
We're not having it.
Yeah. I think we are the type right now that will roll up and die. And you saw it with City when they came to us last season, where we could have had a say in it, and we just didn't turn up. And I think I actually wouldn't rule out a change of management after this game, really? Because I think if it's embarrassing, and what you don't want to do is you don't want to put someone in for Liverpool, right? You kind of want... If we're gonna make a change, let him take the battering and embarrass us against our biggest rivals of all time, and then let's say goodbye, right? I mean, maybe it's more wishful thinking than anything else. I think the thing that really annoys me is when Solskjaer talks about people can see what I'm trying to do and what I'm thinking. And I think what he's actually implying by that is a lot of people, players that I know you guys don't rate, like Sanchez, like Lukaku, I've moved them on. And I think he's saying he's clearing the way for a brighter day. But the fact is, like, Sanchez is on loan, right? He's the problem's coming back, right? And I actually think getting rid of players, regardless of how good or bad they are, and not having the physical bodies to replace, like, up front, it's Rashford or a very green Mason Greenwood, right? Like, that is not a place that a club like Man United should be in.
The letting go of Lukaku. Lukaku scored 26 league goals in a season for Everton. 26 league goals in a season for Everton. Why you don't, if you're where Manchester United were when Solskjaer turns up, and the same goes for Mourinho, why you don't say, listen, our pathway, for the short term at least, is we ensure we get 26 league goals out of this lad. Because he can do it, we know he can do it. Will most of them be against the bottom 10? Yeah, but you've still got to beat them. You know, you beat the bottom 10 home and away, that's 60 points. You finish top four if you do that. Lukaku's a bizarre footballer anyway, in that he should be one of the most loved footballers on the planet, and everywhere he goes he's ended up being treated with disdain. I think he's great. I think he's underrated. But more than any of that, I think he was away home for Man United at a point where what they needed to do was rebuild, and instead he felt so so ostracised by the end. He's, you know, he's knocking around other clubs, posing with other shirts. It's bad, 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 bad management. Really, really bad management. And then it's compounded by the fact that you forced him out of the club, slash he's been desperate to go, and then not replaced him. That's absolutely crackers. That, it is genuinely crackers.
I agree with all of it, apart from... I don't agree with any of it apart from the fact we didn't replace him. And I'll tell you why, right? I think sometimes we get carried away of, yeah, he was a flat track bully and we need one. I get that. Like, I'll take Lukaku back tomorrow. But the fact is, we are Man United. And if we are going to hold ourselves in high stead, right, this guy did not have a first touch. I've watched him try to trap a ball and it bounced into the stands. I was literally four rows back from the pitch side. We were playing Brighton, right? It was 0-0. It was a dreary day. It was like maybe 50, 60 minutes on the clock. And he was dead on his feet. There was a throw into Brighton. He couldn't even mark a player. He was puffing so hard. And Solskjaer can take the blame or whatever that you got. If you know this guy's fitness is an issue, you get him fit. It's like Higuain. Like, he's someone that's not fit all the time, right? But I think what United wanted, and it's similar, like, fans, sometimes we need a reality check, because we were terrible to Dimitar Berbatov, who is arguably one of the most skillful players we had at the squad, right? And so I think there is an issue. But if I had the choice, mainly because I don't think you should be paying £75 million for someone that's only going to score against the bottom half, I would have got rid of him, definitely. But I would have replaced him. And I would have replaced him with someone that could have done bits against the bigger squad, right?
Mandzukic.
Don't wind me up.
He's coming.
Don't wind me up, G.
Oh, it's 2-0. 2-0 breaking is a 2-0. It's 2-0. Barkley? Oh, wow. Go on, G. Go on.
Chelsea B team winning it for England.
He's a star. Yeah,
final... Sorry, what? So, final point on this one, G. Are you like me of the mindset that United? Probably not,
I can see a shot coming.
Be careful, George. Be careful. Know who you back.
Are you of the mindset that, like me, United fans and the hierarchy may need to lower the expectations in terms of who they can get as the next guy?
Well, because, does it get much lower than Ollie?
Oh, didn't think of that.
For once, I am in total agreement. And you know how it is, Jordan, because we Kerbishley.
what I was going for,
Allardyce. We can go lower than Ole, but it's pretty much of a muchness.
I listened to a podcast. I think it was the Guardian podcast last week, and they were saying, the guy on there was saying, you could go as low as Millwall before you find a manager who you probably take less than Ole. So basically, I don't know where Millwall are in the championship. But there's about eight managers in the championship that you take before Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yeah. But they're talking about Allegri's available. Let's go and get Allegri. I'm not convinced that Allegri would go to United anymore. I'm not sure if you're Allegri, you want to go there.
But there's only...
Am I just being a bit harsh? Or can they still draw the best managers in the world?
10 years ago, United could have gone and taken managers from 7 out of 10 clubs. Now you're looking for someone who's in a crossroads, who's just come out of a job. And it looks at it as a big challenge. And that's it. So yes, it could be Allegri, but not because he would take United over Juventus. Don't want it.
But would he want to go to United?
Now, unemployed, after his year out, I think he'd take the job.
Money talks as well, George.
I think it's disrespectful.
I'm not sure, because I don't think a lot of money... I think it's more than money. He's not broke.
Well, I think if you look at the situation of where we are now, right? It's almost it's ready for someone to grab it by the neck, right?
But is it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think
that board.
I think the infrastructure we've talked about, but essentially what I'm saying is Allegri doesn't come in and do worse than Ole, right? And I think, regardless of how bad the board is, financially you'll get backing, right? Even to the end, I read that they're going to give Ole money in January.
But hang on, isn't this the problem, though? They'll always give managers money, but if what...
No,
if
I think where I'm going is, the question you're asking is, can we get a top manager after Ole? And the answer is a resounding yes. I have no doubt, and I get the point, there's Peps and Klopps that don't come, right? Fair enough. And, why would we take a manager from a rival club? It doesn't happen in our league, right? But I think of the best of the best out there, I still think we were talking about one of, if not the biggest club in the world. People will still want to Have a go.
I don't think so, but we'll see. We'll see.
Oh, you don't think a lot of things.
We'll see. Right, so we started this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, Gene? We got your player that I asked you to mention, who a player that you would like to the current generation of football fans to see play. We've heard yours, so I want to get Neil's and Marvin's.
Mine was John Barnes, by the way, Neil, just see.
So, I should think so. He would have been mine.
Are we talking in Prem or out of Prem?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Both. One of
I
each.
Still wouldn't have picked John Barnes, to be fair.
Okay, and I'm also hearing that apparently all the black players that are playing currently for England are being booed whenever they touch the ball.
Oh,
which is interesting and disappointing.
But unsurprising.
Jesus Christ. Let's start with you, Neil. Who's the Premier League player of yore who you would love the current football fan that's not from your club to have seen play or to see play this weekend?
Marcel Desailly.
Go on.
Because he was the first sort of genuine, well, in the Premier League, I'd say the first sort of genuine 21st century defender. Brings it out gorgeously, is unbelievably fast across the ground, strong as anything, terrific in the air. He was the first...
Good for a goal.
Yeah, good for a goal. He was one of the first genuine sort of midfielders who... I mean, it's been going on forever, midfielders falling back into defence, but the way in which Desailly did it was a way which was just genuinely quite unique. And I think also the sheer athleticism combined with the brain of him is something that's lost. I think, for instance, you know, Mark Lawrenson's much underrated as a footballer, not least because of his current punditry.
I was going to say,
You know, I think there's very few defence. So, for instance, everyone talks about Alan Hansen in a Liverpool context, but Hansen was more of a bit of a throwback whilst he was being Alan Hansen, in that it was all about his unbelievable ability to read the game, his anticipation and his class on the ball. But what he didn't have was the ability to cover ground at the same pace as Mark Lawrenson, or, for instance, Marcel Desailly, who, you know, he could come up against the very best striker and could one-on-one defend against him until the cows came home. And there isn't a centre forward right now in this league who, for instance, you could expect would right now over 90 minutes get the best out of Desailly. And I think he's got things in common with Van Dijk for that sort of thing, but I don't think it's just that. And I think also the big thing that Van Dijk's got in his favour is that he's 6'7". Mm-hmm. Desailly wasn't enormous, he's about 6'2", but was still so physically imposing. And I think he was, the first, in many senses, he was the first of them. I think he was he's almost 10 years ahead of his time, as I say. Lawrenson's well ahead of his time. Desailly's 10 years ahead of his time. In a way where when Hullett came to Chelsea, he was more of a sweeper, and he was therefore a bit of a throwback, even when he was being brilliant at being Ruud Hullett, whereas Desailly is a man for all eras, and he would fit in to any... If you imagine Desailly at his Chelsea peak right now, there isn't a Premier League team this weekend he wouldn't start for. He'd start for Liverpool alongside Van Dijk. He'd start for Man City ahead of everybody. He'd start for Leicester ahead of everybody. He'd start for United ahead of everybody. You go right the way down, he would start for every single Premier League team.
To be fair, I'd start for United this weekend if they gave me a I get your point.
It's just BS. Yes, it is, Jordan. It is. You're over 30 for a start.
Is Phil Jones starting?
Yeah, I'll probably take Jordan over Phil Jones.
Marvin, who's your pick?
You know, I was torn with this, right? And that's because I've got a fan favourite and then I've got just the facts, right? Oh, okay. But I'm going
to... I know who you go with the fan favourite, but I'll let you go.
No, because he said not your club. I know you like him too, though. But actually, I'm going to go with the fan favourite just because I can. And I just remember when I was growing up, and I think one of the ways you posted it was about that you'd like the youth to see. And I really like Letizia. Mm-hmm. I was a massive fan of him because I think in today's day and age, all these kids, and I use like my younger cousins, are like, he's pacey, this, that, and the other. They, you know, I had one of them telling me that James, we should build the team around him because he's really quick. Needless to say, he can't control the ball for anything.
What's going on?
Ukraine 2, Portugal.
Oh, Ukraine are winning 2-0. That's Shevchenko.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. But yeah, so for me, like, I love Letizia. He was a dead ball specialist. He was a technician on the ball. The way he could pass and just glide along the pitch. He wasn't fast, but he was effortless. I loved to watch him. And there was once, I was ridiculed at school because there's once a time when we were interested in him and people were like, he's nowhere near the class. And I think for me, technically, and I know he didn't get like the love for England or ever, but I loved him. A beautiful, graceful, like I compare him to a swan, what he could do with the ball. And actually just really intelligent. and not just intelligent as a footballer, even when you see him on the panel with the rest of the pundits.
Again, the bar's quite low.
The bar is quite low. Shout out to Paul Merson. He's just one of those players that I would love to show my younger cousin that you don't need out and out pace. So maybe people say the modern game's changed, but I still think he could do the business right now at his peak. So he's one of the ones that I would love to see.
And if he was a swan, he'd be a pretty big swan, wouldn't he?
I mean, he's definitely had a bit. He's always carried a bit of timber, but it's the queen's animal, so it's fine.
And just super briefly, who was your non-Premier League player?
Oh, this is easy. The real Ronaldo, R9, all day. Loved him. Amazing. My favourite player of all time. Just a phenomenal player.
Who do you think will go down as a greater player out of the two Ronaldos?
Out of the two? I mean, just because of sponsorship, media, social, this and that, it will be Cristiano. But
not because the stats and the goals and the five Champions League.
George, I mean, I know what Neil was talking about. I know what Neil was talking about in terms of modern day... like how defences have changed
guys, I think we've got a situation going on with the fans. Sorry, this is awful podding. I think we might have a situation with the fans in the game. I don't know. They just, the camera cut to the fans and there's some stoppages going on. And
they look like they're looking at something.
Calling someone over. And they've got Rashford on the screen. Okay, let's carry on. We'll keep crossing. Sorry.
Yeah, so the reason why... You're right, it will be Cristiano is because of the stats and blah, blah, blah.
But no,
what I'd be very clear about is defending as an art form has got progressively worse with time. And what I mean by that, one of my biggest bugbears, and I compare it, I keep talking about, and I'm not that old, I just want to point that out. But when we talk about the youth, right, is the fact that fullbacks now are gauged on how good they are when it comes to going forward. Trent Alexander-Arnold, who I really like, is not actually a good defender, right? He will get there, and I think with time and you know, maturity, he will get there. But modern day defending is not what it is. So I guess the question that I would flip is: would Cristiano hit all those stats and win all those things in the R9 era? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is no.
Okay, just briefly, Noel, who is your pick for non-Premier League player?
Michael Laudrup, because the weight of his passes.
Josh picked him on our first week.
Did he?
Was it Michael O'Brien?
It was Michael,
wasn't it?
Weight of his passes. You know, I can watch any YouTube compilation you can give me of Michael Laudrup playing a through ball. And I think there's a big thing on weight of pass. I think it's the underrated part of passing a football, to be honest with you, and certainly when you're looking to put someone through. And I think the idea that it's just sort of perfectly weathered into someone's path, knowing the pace of the player, just having such an understanding of everything that's going on around you. I think direction is obviously crucially important, but I think you know you've got an unbelievable footballer when the weight is perfect. I think it's something, for instance, Firmino has done really well for Liverpool at times this season, the way he weights passes in and out of other players. But he's nothing compared to Laudrup. Laudrup was just phenomenal at it, and
Lampard
was a good passer of the ball as well, but I think
yes, he was.
The good pass of the ball from the penalty spot.
There's a thing about Laudrup and what he does and the way in which he would just find little angles, and he never played Premier League football, and I think that's a real shame in that I think he would have played, you know, if he'd have come in the mid 80s and played, for instance, with an Ian Rush or a Clive Allen, Gary Lineker. I think he plays with Lineker at Barcelona, but you know, the idea of those sorts of proper number 9 centre forwards making those sorts of runs and a ball in would have been just incredible.
Who was your non-Premier League
you know
player? What I don't know if I did a non-Premier League.
Let's keep
we've
it
got
away.
3-0 England. Ross Barkley again, and I've just been told protocol 1 has been enacted for the 3 steps for in enacting the walk off, so we'll keep across that.
But just have it like the, I mean, because the problem is now they're getting battered, so they've got nothing to lose, so they might as well do it. It's just,
what's the penalty off the walk off though? What is it? Is it a 3-0 loss?
Don't know.
No, I think they go off for 10 minutes and then they come back on or something.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Oh, is that it? Oh, they'll definitely run that.
We'll keep across.
I mean, if Barkley gets a hat trick, you'd probably go for it, right? How disrespectful you get a hat trick.
We've ran massively over, so we're going to drop our final topic. But I wanted to just mention, you mentioned Phil Foden earlier, just super briefly. What do you do if you're Phil Foden? Do you gamble and wait till Silva leaves next season, hoping that you'll be the guy to step in? Or do you think that he's at a point now where he's missing England internationals, he's missing minutes at Manchester City, he needs to make a move and start playing?
I think he's in a crucial time now, and I think it is decision time. I'd personally be looking for a loan in January. It depended on how things progress for him, because it's just a shame. It's like, if you look at it, I watched the under-21s in the summer, because I had to, because I got a look at the players who we were bringing in. And Mason Mount couldn't get off the bench for this guy. And now if you look at what Mason Mount is doing and the minutes he's getting in comparison, it's just like, he just has to get a chance. And the thing is, there's been times where City have been so much better than everyone else. You could easily give him a chance. You could say one Premier League match per month. You just give.
No, but I think he has given him chances. There was one where he scored the winner, but I think the thing is, at this stage of his development, he needs consistency. I don't think you can dip him in and out, right? If he's really, and I can't even tell you he's a good player, but what I can tell you is, when I've watched him at an under 21 level, that is someone who could kick on to the next level if he gets Premier League consistency.
Best thing that could happen for Foden, which is conveniently the best thing that could happen for humanity, is if Liverpool got 14, 15 points ahead of Manchester City and the title was all over by Christmas, and then he gets loads of games second half of the season. And
I think that humanity should end at that point.
I think that in that instance, Phil Foden and humanity would be the winner.
I wonder if Phil Foden, Marvin, just finally, if Pep's maybe doing something quite smart. I wonder if he's deliberately holding him back to see how he reacts. I wonder if Pep's thinking to himself, okay, I could be playing you, maybe I should be playing you, but I want to see if you sulk, kick up a fuss, or if you're patient, bide your time, stay professional in training, and then when you do get your chance, you deliver. Do you think there's maybe, because he talks about how he's the best player he's ever coached, and
he's been very vocal about it, and I think he is playing a game, but I just think when it comes down to the crunch, and I'm not for one second saying that I'm an expert, a footballing expert, but I just think, at this point in time, to G's point, when you're looking at other people that you know you're better than kicking on, and they're probably kicking on because they've gone out on loan and did the hard graft in the Championship, or gone out on loan and just played to really test you, not just you mentally, but your body physically. Can you play at this level week in, week out? You've got to ask yourself questions. I think he should stick around, but I think he should have gone out on loan this year anyway from the start of the season. I think there was enough new teams in the Prem where he could have been a starter.
But isn't the issue that he's probably so refined in a Pep Guardiola kind of way, there's only so many teams he can play for?
Well, I don't think that's an advert for a player, really. If you can only play under one manager, then what does that say about you?
No, but Pep's clearly building him to be a particular type of midfielder.
But he could get a
You couldn't go to Bournemouth. No,
I think you could go to Bournemouth.
Or Leicester. You could go to any club. Do you know what I mean? If they're trying to make
I don't think you go to a club that's just going to play like kick it long football. But actually, I think as poor as some of the clubs are, even Norwich, who are very stop and start, everyone now
just playing ball.
Is trying to... Maybe not United, but many people are getting it down on the turf. And I actually think a club that's not as big is where he could really demonstrate and be that guiding light and really demonstrate how good he is. But he's City, so when it comes down to it, how much do I really care?
G, Marvin, cheers for coming on this week's pod. Neil, your podcast and show, just give it a quick plug.
Yeah, The Anfield Wrap, if people want to check it out, theanfieldwrap.com. And we've got an app, download that as well. Not just for Liverpool supporters, but mostly for Liverpool supporters.
I was going to say, has Liverpool supporters got phones that download
apps? All right.
Are they still on the Nokia 3210s?
Absolutely. Whatever
you can steal from the neighbouring town.
Honestly, absolutely astonishing. I've stuck up for him during this show, and you've been bullying him, Jordan. It just had to be at the last. I've said it's unfair. I've said it's out of order. This is what it turns into.
Blow, Marvin. Anyway,
you have to get one in. You have to get one.
Well, if you do have a phone, subscribe to the podcast.
we'll wave our phones at 3-0 up on Sunday. Just think you
And the thing is, I wanted to lean forward and go, it's not going to be 3-0, but I come back in. I come back myself.
Football Fans Podcast on iTunes and Spotify. Until next week, peace.